Welcome to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. All right. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm really excited to have Balki Kudarappu. He's been in tech for a while as a CTO, and he has a company that does fractional CTOs for startups and companies up to 40 million in ARR, but like at 25% of the price on a fractional basis or less. But Balki, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your background and what you do, and then we can get into a good conversation on AI and tech and wherever the conversation goes.
Yeah, thank you, Dean. I'm so delighted to be here. Yes, I'm a veteran in the industry. You can call me that. Grudgingly call myself a veteran. Been in the industry for 20 years. Started as a individual contributor engineer, slinging code at anything that came my way and made my way in the engineering ranks. And more recently, with all the experience and expertise I've gained across many industries, many size companies, I have reincarnated as a fractional CTO, loving this ride. I've been doing it for 2 years, and all the experience I had over the 20 years almost fit like puzzle pieces where I can provide precise, relevant guidance to startups when they're in trouble or when they're wanting to scale. So it's been a great journey for 20 years. I wouldn't trade it for anything else, especially the last 2 years as a fractional CTO.
Yeah, that's awesome. We're all in an exciting time now with AI and AI coding. And yeah, how has that all affected some of the clients that you're working with? How is AI and AI coding? And maybe like for the benefit of our audience, don't hype it because there's too much hype out there, really what AI coding can do. And I feel like I'm on a mission to level set everybody of it's great.
I'm with you.
Here's where it is. So yeah, go ahead and share your point of view.
Yeah, not just because I'm a veteran and I've seen it all, but I also like in real time work with AI products like regularly at companies that are not hype companies, but they're level-headed. They have revenue that they're scaling, right? Which is 90% of the market. There's only like 5, 10, 20 companies that are like cursor, but the rest of us are regular companies just wanting to scale and help the community. So that's who I help. But I'll maybe talk about a little bit, go back in history, just a few years, because it's highly relevant. So I worked at a company called Support Logic. Essentially, we used the old-fashioned, if you might, like machine learning models to bubble up insights on support tickets. And for example, we would say, oh, based on the like our NLP on this ticket comments, there's a high chance this customer will escalate and blow the lid. So we did that, and we built our own machine learning models the old-fashioned way, spent millions of dollars building those models until LLMs came along. So yeah, I worked in that industry as well, and I in the weeds. But since then, every company I've helped has some flavor of AI, right? So most companies I help have started in the pre-AI, Gen AI era, but are now rapidly adapting and wanting to help their customers. What I call this is AI giving superpowers to our engineers, our non-engineers, and more importantly, to our customers to do their job extremely well. So it's a very, I would say, pragmatic, realistic view of taking AI. So maybe I'll talk about how we are using AI to augment our product. So at one company, I'm working for a pharmacy tech company. The company did extremely well post-COVID, because what we do there is really help the pharmacist set up high caliber appointments for vaccinations, etc., which has become a big deal after COVID, right? So very traditional, very old-fashioned product, but with the advent of AI, we're adding a lot of bells and whistles on top of that. So one feature we released is called AI Scribe. So what it does is, when the pharmacist is talking to the patient, instead of them taking notes, which is error prone and painful, we have developed a very sophisticated Gen AI based solution that will automatically scribe that conversation and saves them tons of money and time. So that's one example. At another company, I helped a health tech company that helps moms who are going through pregnancy. There are caretakers who help these moms proactively and reactively through their pregnancy. And again, we've given these caretakers superpowers. We gather data about the mom's health. For example, we send them weight scale, we send them a blood pressure monitor, baby heart rate monitor, lots of devices, and we track all that data. The care navigators manually look at the data for any anomalies, but over time we have developed machine learning algorithms, so we automatically detect trends that where we should escalate to their primary care physician. It's a long-winded story, but like, you can see the trend here, right? So things that we were already doing, we're augmenting, we're making it more accurate, more highly productive, etc. So that's helping the product features itself. I'll pause there and see if you're going in the right direction.
Yeah. And I'm curious too, like, how have you seen and advised and worked with some of your clients maybe around DevOps and how AI is helping with DevOps and some of these other things we all have to do?
Yeah, as a recovering engineer, that's close to my heart. Within engineering, I see very clearly where AI can help in two ways. One is the more obvious, the more hyped up. Oh yeah, if you give the engineers Cursor or Copilot or all these many tools, now Claude Code is very popular and for good reason, and we can talk about that. So that's the more obvious route, right? So there is nuance there, but it's obviously improving productivity. My humble measure is maybe in the 20 to 30% range, maybe in the 60 to 100% range for net new products. So if it's a greenfield, very fresh product, there's not many restrictions, so we can accelerate their development much faster, and I can see it in the field. But for a more mature product, which obviously has tech debt, 20 to 30% improvement in productivity is very good. So that's what I'm seeing. So that's the more obvious tools helping productivity. But the ones I'm very excited about and wide-eyed is the what I call the four pillars of engineering excellence, and one of them is the DevOps. So those four pillars quickly for me are observability and monitoring. The second pillar is the CD/DevOps, all that under that umbrella, deployment. The third pillar is testing, automated testing. And the fourth pillar is modular architecture. We can talk about maybe one of the pillars where AI is giving superpowers to our engineers. The one fresh on my mind, like today, this morning, I've been doing some research and evaluating a vendor. We're getting a lot of bang for the buck in accelerating and decreasing the time of pull request. So there's some good mature tools there that I'm working with. Two of those are CodeRabbit and Graphite. So they use several different data points and obviously Gen AI to really give high quality feedback on pull requests. So your engineer creates a pull request, and then it's almost giving superpowers to the person who is doing the review, give all the context. For example, CodeRabbit has this neat feature where it looks at the Jira ticket that was part of the pull request and creates a checklist saying, have you met all the requirements that the Jira has? So I get excited about things like that. So it brings so much clarity and speed to existing processes we have relied on for decades.
Yeah, that's great. I just read this morning, which I loved reading, was from the head of AWS that it's just silly not to hire junior people. They're the future pipeline of great employees. And I think it just says, look, the hype about how, oh, you don't need developers anymore. And yeah, it's amazing how the productivity is helping, but they're at a junior level and it needs lots of guidance. And as you talk about everything we're building, so now we can build intelligence into our apps, which is amazing. And we can provide all kinds of solutions, but you have to have a critical mind thinking and a engineering or systems mindset to integrate, do the tool chaining, solve these problems. I'm just like, please don't not study computer science or any engineering discipline. And yeah, we're hard. You need to keep hiring people. People are critical to all of our companies and just how AI is just going to take over everything. No, we're all still building. Everyone's talking about agentic AI. Very few people are shipping it. Yeah, everyone's working on it, including us. And so, yeah, I'm sorry to take a little bit of this podcast, but I just wanted to like kind of share like the state of where things are. It's some of the hype out there is just too big. And yet the opportunity for you, me, and everyone else of building some really cool solutions is there for sure. But
yeah,
I don't know if you want to expand on that or how.
Yeah, yeah, I love this
that.
Topic. So yeah, I'll plug like my son who's 16 years old. So he hasn't gotten too much into software, but this past 6 months, somehow he got fascinated with software.
Excellent.
And he's like this purist mathematical person who goes deep into topics. And I was happy when he got into software. And he's taking that same mindset you're talking about, like for the fundamentals. But the very interesting part is I introduced him to Cursor. He got very wide-eyed, challenged me, like when Cursor is able to do all this, why do I need to learn the fundamentals? So I usually don't give an ultimatum, but I gave an ultimatum to him in this case. If you want to go into software, I want you to tread both these like very distinct angles, right? Use Cursor to write code faster, but I never want you to give up on the learning the fundamental. So he took that to heart, at least so far. And
great advice.
You know,
great
that
advice.
Navigating those two is hard for a little 16-year-old, but I think that's what builds his future. At least that's my take right now.
100%. Great. I think that's great, great advice because, first of all, AI makes mistakes and you need to be able to review that. And then just how we all solve problems and think about things, that critical thinking, like you need that. And, but yeah, good job. Good job there. Good advice for your son. I hope he listens. Tell him to listen to this podcast and say, yeah.
Yeah, he would
another,
like your advice.
Yeah, like good advice. Good advice. So what kind of advice do you have for, it's hard to run product teams. Like maybe you could share some of the things you've learned over the years in managing and running product teams.
Yeah, my take is continue to do the good practices we've developed over time. Like I mentioned, the four pillars of engineering excellence. I've always talked about that and I've invested. And I believe we need to double down on those, right? So when the AI slop word is getting thrown around a lot, which is true, right? And a lot of substandard code is bound to enter into our production. To minimize the negative effects of that, I'm insisting and telling my engineering teams to focus more on these four pillars, right? So there's no way we can stop this AI slop getting into production, but these pillars will help us navigate that in a better way, like with eyes wide open. When something goes wrong, 2 months later, our observability tools will help us bubble up the issue long before our customer finds it, for example. And when we are accelerating the amount of code we are writing, we need to have a smooth and streamlined way to get that into production. And automated testing, it's pretty obvious, right? So it's been more important than ever to invest in that. In the past, we were like, oh, I don't have time or money, or like we're just moving. We have to move fast and break things. But no, you don't need to. If you have this just a little bit, not even 5 years into the future, 3-6 months into the future, thinking of have like high quality code. And again, like I'm excited and wide-eyed about AI because it makes building and strengthening all of these pillars much, much easier and cost effective. That's, I'll preach to the choir every day.
Yeah. And vibe coding and is great for prototypes and like exploring the user experience and what you're going to do. But then if you're building a commercial product and you're going to have to support it for years and decades, your advice is so critical because you have to go slow to go fast. I'm sure you've seen so many teams just tied down in tech debt, and it just slows down everything in order to continue to move fast in the future. That's just some good advice, that sticking with the fundamentals and taking the time to ensure quality.
Yeah. Again, I'll double down on that topic, right? So in the past, including myself, said it's inevitable we stack up, rack up tech debt in pursuit of speed. Today, that's not true, and for very good reason, right? Like I mentioned, like from day one, if not from day one, maybe from once you have your first customers and they're paying for it, it's your responsibility to release high quality code. And you can do that very cost effectively with the help of AI. I will preach that and as long as
Good,
I'm in this
good.
career.
Now, who are your customers? I'm just trying to visualize them. Is that so I know a lot of tech people. So tech people start companies, but then they're running the dev teams. And are they tech founders? Are they business and tech founders? Like, what's your mix? Like, who are your customers?
The primary ICP is actually non-tech founders for me.
Yeah.
I won't go into the details, but they see the value in
Yeah,
me
that makes
coming
total
in and
sense.
yeah,
Yeah.
streamline their operations. Usually they're like seed, like I mentioned, they've gotten some level of product market fit, maybe funding. I've also helped companies that have very little funding. They usually can't afford me, but I'm happy to advise in a more of an advisory role if they don't have funding. But somewhere in that like post-seed bridge to Series C and D, some companies even at Series C surprisingly are looking at fractional services. Yeah, that's me. And then I grudgingly admit I've specialized in regulatory compliance industries, which is a premium skill.
And a lot of patience.
Sometimes, exactly. So I want to pull my hair out some days, but I won't deny my expertise and experience, and more importantly, patience dealing with these governance issues. So right now I'm helping several health tech companies. Over the years, I can help fintech companies with my in my sleep because I've done it for so long. So it's a premium expertise. So that's where I'm specializing these days.
And like, how do you, I'm just trying to understand more. So I get what the CTO does, but how do you, are you a CTO and a chief product officer run? And is there a difference, or like, how does that work?
Yeah, it's a good question. These days, CPTO is becoming more common. I'm still on the fence about that role. I feel in the past that those roles being separate and reporting up to the CEO worked very well, mostly because I like the healthy friction that needs to exist between product and technology engineering, right? So when there was no friction, I would intentionally introduce the friction because that helps us build better product. But when those roles are combined, I'm like the verdict is still out if you can build a great product. But that aside, for now, I'm primarily partnering with an existing product head. Many times there's a CPO, VP of product that I partner with. Sometimes if it's earlier stage, in fact, I recommend to CEOs that they be the chief product officer and they play
Good
that role for
advice.
as long as possible.
Yeah, good
Because once
advice.
they like out of that product loop, the founder passion gets diluted. So I recommend them. Like selfishly, I say, if you're the CTO, also hand that off to me. I'll act like a late co-founder and be a good steward for engineering, but hang on to that CPO role for as long as you can. My recommendation is that like 5 to 7 to 10 million point is when they can start thinking about hire in that role.
I think that's some great advice, really good advice. And so what question didn't I ask you that you wish I would have asked?
One of the questions which has like second nature for me is how I balance, right? So it's hard enough to be a head of engineering for one company. At one point, I was doing that for three companies. In the moment, I was enjoying it so much, I didn't think of it. But yeah, in reflection, it is not easy, but again, like it for me, it's a couple of things. One, I have a very strong family commitment. So I have young kids, as I mentioned, and they're my life. So If in doubt, I prioritize my time with them. It doesn't always happen, but something is burning, but my kids need me. I have a slight bias to help my kids first. So there's a natural bias. So that's
big priority.
And the second is, over years, I've learned to separate my role from my identity. When I combine those two, it took a heavy toll on my mental health as well as physical health. So I've intentionally separated the two. What that I mean is, like, I'm a CTO from 9 to 5 or even 9 to 8 p.m. But after that, I'm a human. Like, I have my life. So it goes in with the other part as well. So ironically, that helps me a better CTO, in my opinion, right? So when I'm not attaching my identity to my role, I make extremely objective decisions. One example is, many CTOs naturally feel like they have to build their empire. They want to have the biggest budget, biggest team, because that's what we've been taught over years. But as a fractional CTO, I have to think and do think more about the company well-being. So many times, even when the CEO is saying, we need to expand the engineering team, I say, maybe not. Let's increase the productivity of the existing folks, increase their engagement, improve the processes before bringing on new people. So those are some of the things that, like, counterintuitively help me detach myself from the job.
So when it wasn't detached, like, what happened? That probably is just good life lessons. It's like, what did that even mean? Were you just always studying after hours, or were you, like, I don't know, were you, I don't know, what happened?
Yeah, it's a good question, right? So it's a very reflective question. Studying is actually a good thing. Like, I don't think I'll ever stop studying. In fact, I wrote a controversial post that I spent 70, 80 hours on my job, right? But only half of that is actually delivering. The remaining half is learning. That's how I came to know about your podcast. I'm, like, obsessed, addicted to podcasts and books and blogs, right? So I just enjoy consuming and using that in my day job. So that I don't see as a mental health issue or anything, at least I don't. But when I attach my identity to the job, everything would be personal. Like, when the CEO or the salespeople say engineering sucks, I took it as me, like, as the head of engineering. No matter what was wrong with the team, I took it very personally, like, lost sleep, and will that mean I get fired or things like that. So that's what I mean by attachment.
Yeah, that's good. So you learned how to just go with the flow and be more objective and detach yourself from that point of view. And then you think clearly anyways. If things really bother you that much emotionally, yeah, not getting good sleep affects your performance. And then people have opinions, and you can only work to either change their opinions, or maybe they're right. You have to improve something, like, one or the other. Either way, you want to change that kind of conversation.
Exactly. Yeah. Feedback is feedback. If there's merit to it, I'll act on it. If there's no merit, I'll ignore it. So that's, like, the level of detachment.
Or if it's coming from maybe a CEO or an important person, then you need to change their thought process.
Like, exactly. Yeah. That's a good point too.
Yeah. Maybe not doing anything wrong, but you need to then maybe tell more stories and talk more about what's going on, what the successes are, what the challenges are. Because a lot of times people just make assumptions without really having enough information.
Yeah, that's a great point too. Like, over the years, I also realized detachment also means be highly transparent at whatever cost. And it helps me sleep better.
Yeah. Share the problem. Good, I'm a big believer in sharing the problem.
Yeah. 90% of the time it's successful, the 10% of the time it's not, I can still sleep, right? Because I've disclosed every single detail, open up the Camino, so have nothing to, like, hide and worry that. I've, like, war stories
easy.
About those.
Yeah, nothing's easy. And when it looks easy, it's just because people are doing a great job. It's nothing. And even everyone that knows, that does a great job, knows it's not easy.
Exactly.
I'm all for sharing the pain. The more the merrier, then everyone has a lot more empathy and also can help solve problems. And that's good. I'm glad I asked that question. I didn't ask you.
Thank you.
So if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. I share two experiences. Many times it's insights as a fractional CTO, but I also share personal stories about my dog, my travels, and my kids. I'm an open book on LinkedIn, share twice a week. I'm probably the only and the first Balki that will come up if you search Balki. And yeah, I'd love to connect with your audience or anyone else on LinkedIn.
And what kind of dog do you have?
I have a 5-year-old golden who's pretty much my life.
Yeah, I have a German Shepherd named Misha. Oh, nice. And thank God for dogs. They're the best. They're the best.
Yeah, they're very entitled. At least my dog is entitled and the most privileged in the world, but I'm okay with it. I'm more than okay with it.
Your dog has a good life, I can tell.
Yeah.
Awesome. I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing some of your experiences and insights. So thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen. And if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida and Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.